Welcome to Real World Rewind, a monthly podcast where we take a look back at some of our favorite movies from years gone by, reminding ourselves that entertainment is not mindless. Joining me on this week's episode is Mark Wingerter.
Hello.
Thanks for coming on.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Our film for this show is Disney's The Rocketeer. It was released in 1991, directed by Joe Johnston, whom you know from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Jumanji, Captain America, The First Avenger. It also stars Billy Campbell, Jennifer Connelly, Alan Arkin, and Timothy Dalton. So we're going to jump right in, start talking about The Rocketeer. So Mark, The Rocketeer is a film that draws inspiration from a number of different pieces and places from Hollywood and pop culture history. And it was also pretty influential to several films and filmmakers. So what are some of the cultural references that you noticed while you were watching most recently? And how do you think The Rocketeer maybe influenced subsequent films or filmmakers?
Well, that's a good question, because it certainly draws on a lot of things. I mean, and primarily it's pretty good at drawing on that Pulp Fiction feel that, you know, I feel like has been popular in and out of Hollywood off and on for decades. I mean, really since Pulp Fiction was a consistent thing and part of the culture, you know, those pulp comics, those, you know, one-off cheap reproduction comics that made, you know, a lot of money for those guys back in the 20s and 30s when they were popular. It just kind of has that feel of not just the era, but you know, the pulp kind of storytelling was very loose and not necessarily, you know, completely thought out. They were just trying to, you know, put them out there. And so while this is a great film and it's a wonderful script and it still kind of has that, like, we're just telling a good story. We're just trying to tell a story that you're going to enjoy. It's going to entertain you. And so I think that, you know, back in the early 90s, kind of had had its day. You know, movies came out after this one, like The Shadow, which I love. The Phantom came out in 96.
Yeah.
There were these movies that had this 1930s dark noirish kind of backdrop, that were all, you know, kind of around the pulp, fiction type of idea. So obviously there's been a lot of influence from those kind of, you know, stories throughout Hollywood, and especially in the superhero genre. I think we're seeing less and less of that now as we get bigger and bigger and more CGI, and that might be for better or worse. But it definitely, as far as influential and drawing from influences of the past of Hollywood, it definitely pays homage to that kind of popular era of storytelling.
Yeah, it does. And it's based on a comic book series by Dave Stevens, and the comics were released in the 80s, but the comics are also set in the late 30s, early 40s. Can you speculate, why do you think they chose to stick with that setting in making a film in the 1990s instead of updating it or bringing it into a more contemporary setting?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it like I said, like back in the 90s, that kind of was a popular backdrop for films. I don't know if it, you know, specifically can be drawn to any one thing that I could put my finger on. You know, superhero movies, and this is it's not a traditional superhero movie, I guess, in the fact that he's a, you know, a big name superhero like Superman or Batman. But I think at the time, you know, filmmakers were trying to, you know, make superhero movies that were makeable, mm-hmm. you know, because they didn't have the CGI that we have now. And that's, you know, part of the boom that we have of all these superheroes. We've got the technology. And surprisingly enough, I mean, the Rocketeer, a guy flying around a rocket,
yeah,
is not an easy thing to do with, you know, 1990 era, you know, graphics. So,
yeah. All of the special effects were done by ILM, and it was a really big deal in the 90s when this film was released.
Go ahead. Absolutely, and I think the era of the 30s, the backdrops of that, especially with how rich and long of a history it has in Hollywood, is kind of an easy thing to recreate, easier than modern era. I mean, if you look at Superman, the first Superman movie, you know, set in the 70s, made in the 70s, so it's set in the 70s. You know, it surprisingly doesn't hold up really that well, even though the 70s is still kind of a stark, kind of simple backdrop. But I think the 30s and pulp kind of era look was simple to recreate, and especially in the 90s as they were trying to make bolder and bigger films with superheroes. I think that had to have been part of the choice. I'm not a film history expert, but I sure watched a lot of movies in the 90s, and I remember seeing that a lot around that time.
Yeah, this is The Rocketeer is a really playful and self-aware film. So, like, there's a fair bit of World War II footage in there, and then there's also a sort of little animated propaganda film that we see in the movie. And that's a hat tip, actually, to some of the propaganda films Disney produced in World War II. So, in case you didn't know, the Walt Disney Studio worked with the government during the war years in World War II to produce propaganda films for all of the various military branches, because mm-hmm. the government saw Disney as a company that really meant something in the public mind, and they saw them doing very entertaining things, and so they seemed like a perfect fit to do something that was a morale-boosting production.
Absolutely.
And so the most noticeable comparison probably that we see The Rocketeer eliciting is to the 1943 film Victory Through Air Power, which is fantastic, and you should track it down and see it if you haven't. It was really significant among all of these propaganda films that Disney made, because many of them were just aimed at the branches of military,
mm-hmm.
but it was aimed at the public as well, and sort of gained this this sort of popularity. And you see a lot of the footage, like if you've seen the footage of Donald Duck, in the World War II get up and everything, that came from Victory Through Air Power. And they used some of that animation and recycled it later on in shorter features.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it certainly seems to be a self-aware film. Is there anything else you saw that was kind of like, hey, this reminds me of other film or reminds me of some things from the past?
Well, I mean, you know, you mentioned the World War II kind of throwback, the Nazi era stuff. I mean, this movie, even in like the typeface on the posters, really does draw back to, you know, Indiana Jones, which, you know, I guess Spielberg and his, you know, brilliance with those, you know, with Indiana Jones being an homage to adventure serials, you know, Rocketeer has an adventure serial type of feel to it, storytelling type of, you know, look and everything, just like Indiana Jones did. And I guess that, you know, Steven Spielberg, I can't say this for certain, but, you know, he kind of started that, maybe a little spin of that, you know, of being part of films, just right. that kind of look and feel, you know, and it's the same thing with the Pulp Fiction comics. You know, they were just those one-off serials that just were there to entertain people. And they told really black and white stories of good and evil. I mean, they're real cut and dry. I mean, and Nazis are the easiest bad guy to, you know, define, right? They're bad. You know, you put a Nazi on screen, there's your bad guy. So,
right. Yeah. So usually, it's funny how this movie looks backwards in a number of ways. So like Neville Sinclair, that's Timothy Dalton's character, is a pretty clear hat tip to Errol Flynn, who was an extremely popular actor in the 30s and 40s. He played a lot of swashbuckling roles. So that scene where they're on set and they're doing a movie where he's sword fighting, that's a nod to Errol Flynn. It's mm-hmm. also interesting to me, Timothy Dalton was James Bond when this movie came out. So that's just really, really clever casting. And that's something that can kind of get lost on us if we kind of forget the order, the sequence of Bond actors. But yeah, so it was probably very entertaining to watch Timothy Dalton, James Bond, play this really disgusting guy.
So it's funny, right?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think it's like 2 years removed from I don't know if it's Living Daylights or License to Kill. License to Kill was his last one. And he just have this, like, you know, not even just Bond. You know, Pierce Brosnan's Bond and Sean Connery's Bond, Roger Moore's Bonds, they were all, you know, kind of funny and loose and, you know, did the one-liners and stuff. And Timothy Dalton's Bond was not. I mean, he was stark and a killer. And so he is kind of this, like, Bond-esque villain. It's kind of a – it's a funny turn for sure. I love how they subverted that with him being the typical hero and he turns out to be a Nazi spy.
Yeah, yeah. It also seems to me that The Rocketeer is a really influential movie for Brad Bird. So – for instance, if you look at The Iron Giant, which, by the way, next month's episode is going to be on The Iron Giant. I'm super excited for that.
Ooh, good pick.
So if you look at The Iron Giant, which we will be doing, but if you actually look at the design of The Iron Giant, you can kind of see he's got like this little fin on the top of his head. Of course, he flies around and everything.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert if you haven't seen it. But I'm just kind of thinking, you know, Brad Bird... Maybe some of this is in mind when they're designing, when he and his animators are working together to design the Iron Giant. And then, of course, you have Brad Bird's Tomorrowland, which came out last year. And George Clooney's character builds a jetpack, crashes it out in the field. That's a pretty clear reference to...
And the boy in Iron Giant is Hogarth Hughes. You know, this is a movie that has Howard Hughes in it, you know.
Yeah.
It definitely is an influence of him, and I wonder how much is it just The Rocketeer, or is it these kind of things that The Rocketeer draws on too? And I wonder, you know, what is he influenced by? Because it's like Spielberg with the eventual serial type of approach to an action movie with Indiana Jones. I mean, he's influenced by, you know, the actual things that all these movies are drawing from. So it's interesting to trace, you know, what inspires somebody and what influences a piece of art directly, just because, you know, everything's built upon itself. You know, there's nothing new under the sun. So everything is a remix, you know, which is a great series on the internet, by the way, you should check out. But everything's a remix. So, I mean, it's like, are you drawing from the actual influences, the original influences, or are you drawing from the thing that was influenced by, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the Iron Giant, his head is basically the Rocketeer's helmet. So.
Yeah. And that's a really good question, though. What influences Brad Bird? Now, I jotted that down, and that's something we're going to deal with on next month's episode. So thank you for doing some of the work for me.
Hey, you're welcome. Anytime.
That's also really funny to me. Jan from the American version of The Office, one of Michael Scott's girlfriends, she's in the nightclub singing. That makes me laugh, you know, watching it.
A very non-Jan role.
Yeah, yeah.
I was really surprised because I, you know, watched this to do this show, and man, you see all these people that you know, Margot Martindale's in there. It was one of her early roles, and she's just a wonderful actress, one of the best, I think. It's just funny to see all the people. I've forgotten actually that Alan Arkin was in this.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's excellent. He's so good in the role.
He is, yeah.
Because he kind of has, you know, his role is kind of typical role. You know, PV is a typical character. He's he's kind of a cliche that, you know, is not a whole lot on the script for him.
Right.
You know, he's kind of trying to play the mentor role and has a lot of the similar beats to, you know, the hero's journey that his character would take. But Alan Arkin's delivery of everything is just wonderful and natural and makes you just really like the character.
Yeah. He has a way of acting with his, which is acting, of acting and shifting his face so that even when he's not saying anything, he's still very much a part of that world when he's in the shot.
Yeah.
So yeah, he certainly brings that, like, that minor, or the sort of limited amount of dialogue he has, and makes the most of his screen time.
I mean, honestly, he's my favorite part of the movie, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, just he's just funny in a way that's not, you know, overt, and it's just really dry and natural. It's great. Yeah.
So something that's interesting about The Rocketeer, and Mark and I were talking about this before we started recording, and The Rocketeer is a movie that has a loyal following. It's not as popular as something like the Iron Giant that is just immensely popular now, and has a pretty solid following. I say immensely popular. I mean, it's got a solid following. The Rocketeer has a sort of smaller, very dedicated fan base. Part of that is because the Rocketeer was a marketing disaster and did very poorly in the U.S. It disappointed at the box office so much that they rebranded it. Disney rebranded it for release in other countries. And I actually found, when I was doing some research for the show, a news clip that explains the situation much more succinctly than I could. So I'm actually just going to go ahead and read this. This is from the Wall Street Journal in 1991. And it says, Walt Disney Company, whose summer movie The Rocketeer was a disappointment in the U.S., has overhauled the film's marketing campaign for international markets. For one thing, the studio has changed the film to a release from Touchstone Pictures. The studio banner that Disney uses for older audience films. It was issued in the U.S. under the Walt Disney Pictures banner. Disney has also abandoned its illustrated U.S. movie poster in favor of a more dramatic picture of the film's stars standing in front of an exploding airplane hangar. Some industry observers speculate that Disney is changing the studio in part because teenagers avoid films under the Disney name. It goes on to kind of explicate that a little bit more. But I found that really, really interesting.
Yeah.
And then as I went back and started looking at some of these old posters, I mean, of course, the original one-sheet poster for The Rocketeer is pretty famous. And it's a very cool poster. But this is a star-studded cast. We mentioned Alan Arkin. And then at that time, Timothy Dalton is huge. And he wasn't in any of the advertising for this movie. I mean, that would have pulled people out in droves to see the movie.
That's crazy. I didn't realize that.
Does The Rocketeer also strike you as something that is, it's not entirely an adult movie, but it's also, there are parts of it that I think I would be immensely frightened of were a little kid.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, being an adult and especially looking at entertainment now that is marketed for younger people that, you know, as an adult, I enjoy and lots of adults enjoy, and they make millions and billions of dollars. There are a lot of themes that are a lot heavier than what's in this movie. And, you know, I had sort of forgotten that it was a Disney release, it is. And looking at it, it's very Disney. It's very, especially now. I think back then, you know, they didn't really know what to do with superhero movies. I mean, I remember being a kid and you know, having that, you know, childhood longing for more superheroes. And, you know, you got one or two solid ones a year, maybe. There's a couple years there where it's like, I think, you know, and I don't know if it was 92, it was Batman Returns was the only one. I mean, you know how dark that is. So I don't think audiences knew exactly how to embrace a superhero movie. I don't think, therefore, then marketers knew how to market it for making lots and lots of money. But not putting James Bond in it is an odd choice,
So we've kind of danced around this issue a little bit, talking about The Rocketeer as a superhero movie.
Yeah.
So what can contemporary superhero movies learn from The Rocketeer?
You know, it's a big question, and, you know, I can answer it personally just from what I experienced rewatching this movie. Because, I mean, I literally, and I told you this before the show, I saw this movie on VHS as a kid, probably in 92, so I was 7 years old. And I probably watched it a few times on VHS, you know, in my early years. And literally, I have not seen the movie since then until this week when I watched it again in full. And I'd probably caught it on TV, passing through a couple times, briefly watched a scene here or there. But as I rewatched it as an adult, it really – not only does it hold up, but it's a really well-crafted, straightforward hero's journey story where you have the guy who doesn't belong, you know, kind of doesn't fit in, and he becomes the hero and, you know, fights against the odds and wins the day. And, you know, having recently seen Suicide Squad, which may or may not be their studio in movies that you're referring to.
We'll never know.
Yeah. And I've talked a lot about this subject. It's something that really fascinates me. But our obsession with the anti-hero and how it's just permeated most of our entertainment. And that's good and bad. There's a lot of layers to that. But I think just understanding that just because something has been done and just because it's old maybe or outdated, it still can be amazing. It still can be good. And I was totally enthralled watching this again by this very simple story told very well. And it's a kind of a metaphor that I can, you know, analogy that I can come up with that is, and I'm sort of a foodie. And so if you have really good ingredients and they're just natural, good, simple ingredients and you make a very simple dish, but if you do it really, really well with a lot of care and you just try to make the best dish that you can, you're probably going to make something pretty amazing. And so that's the way I feel like, you know, looking at a movie like this, it's still, I mean, go and if you haven't seen this movie in a while and you're listening to this podcast, I mean, go rewatch it, sit down and watch from beginning to end and tell me you're not, you know, in the story. Tell me you're not rooting for our hero. Tell me you're not, you know, enjoying the kind of relishing in this noirish pulp fiction-y type of story, and the villain is, you know, convincing enough. You know, we talk a lot about bad villains, and, you know, part of my theory is that people don't really, you know, people spend a lot of time with like Iron Man and Thor and Captain America, so we know them a lot better than the villains. And if they're defeated by the end of the movie and they're dead for good, they feel like that's weak, and that could be, you know, true or not. But if you look at the Rocketeer, that's what happens here, and I thought it was convincing and wonderful. So it's all done really well. So just take a good, solid story, make the best script that you can, you know, care about the characters, and just make a good movie. I think you can really learn from, you know, The Rocketeer is a pretty simple movie. It's pretty straightforward, but it's so good. So I think that's a lesson that, you know, these filmmakers that, and granted, you know, somebody trying to make a DC universe happen has a lot of responsibility to make a whole lot of money. So cramming a lot of ideas in is kind of become the formula now. And I think that can still work. Just focus on the story and make a really good movie. Don't worry about, you know, audiences' expectations compared to other films. Just make a good movie and you'll be fine.
Yeah, that's almost exactly what I had sort of in my mind as the answer to this question, is the idea of restraint. Sometimes less is more. And there's so many places in The Rocketeer where they're just building character. And it's not all in your face and moving from one place to another so fast that you can't keep up. Like you said, it's really simple. And sometimes that can be a really good thing. Another thing that sticks out to me is the age-old maxim of show versus tell.
Absolutely.
Many of these contemporary superhero movies are constantly telling audiences what to feel through monologues from the heroes or the villains. They use really straightforward dialogue and action. But in The Rocketeer, there are these crazy things like shadows. So you have like Lothar's shadow on the wall. You're not exactly seeing what's going on. There are near misses. Like Lothar walks right past Jennifer Connelly's character in the ball and she doesn't see him. It's the old Hitchcock method of suspense. Give the audience a piece of information. Let them know something that a character doesn't. And then let us squirm in our seats, seeing how it's all going to work out. And
absolutely.
I feel like so many of these contemporary superhero films don't do that. It's all just right there, spoon-fed to you.
And there's a lot of reasons why that doesn't happen, but I think one of them is definitely that they don't really have a lot of time. You know, planning out suspense like that takes real care and real effort and time. And I think when you're trying to churn out movies, you know, you lose some of that.
Yeah.
I think that's a completely fair statement. You lose some time. And so I think – you know, just taking the time to write a really good scene, you know, and not just focus on the visual and focus on the action. You know, that's what one thing that kind of struck me about rewatching this now is that it's just, and there's just so many scenes and there's just people talking to each other like yeah. people do, and having a natural conversation and having that naturally build the story and build the characters, because all of these, you know, you put a character in a movie, they're a person, you know, they have, everybody has a story. So I think that's something that maybe because they have limited CGI back then, they had to take more time to just kind of let's sit with our characters and make this. I think, you know, scene reinvention back then, you know, and really it still exists, of course, but, you know, in a movie like this, you know, just try to make it interesting when it's an action movie and you don't have a lot of, you know, great graphics. You just have to kind of make things interesting and keep things going while still telling your story. And so just have people sit down together. I mean, you know, that's why some of the stuff like in the Avengers movies works great, because, you know, like in the first movie, they're allowed to just kind of sit there and talk to each other, you know, and so, you know, that's probably a bad example, but. And there's still some of that out there now, but I think we need more of that, especially in these big superhero movies. You have these enormous personalities and these enormous complex characters. Sit with them for a second, have them drink, you know, some coffee and have a discussion and just see what comes out, because they're so rich and so complex. You're just going to they're going to tell the story themselves.
Yeah. And I would say that none of this was to bash on modern superhero movies. I enjoy most of them. In fact, I even say, I mean, if any of you have read my review of Batman vs. Superman, I really, really, really like Batman vs. Superman. I just also realize it has many, many problems.
Yeah, and there's a really good, you know, breakdown of what Zack Snyder's style kind of ultimately does to films, where he spends a lot of time focusing on moments.
Yeah.
You know, if anybody's seen that video, but anyway, I enjoyed the setting and the action and the ideas of these characters, but primarily because I know a lot of about Batman and about Superman. I already know that. So I'm kind of already invested. And, you know, with the stock that you have in these characters, and the filmmakers have this rich backstory that people already know, you have every reason to make a good movie. And it's fascinating to me that with a movie like The Rocketeer, that back then people didn't really know anything about him. Still, they don't know anything about him. It's still a great movie.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a disconnect there that with characters that you know so much about, and you've seen movie after movie after movie with, you can't make a good movie, a solid movie that works like you can The Rocketeer. But The Rocketeer is, you're going in blind,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's to the credit of, and that's why I think it has staying power. That's why I think it holds up so well. Is that this movie is well, so well done and so well crafted with care.
Yeah, absolutely. I do also want to talk about what The Rocketeer has to say as a superhero movie. And since it is a superhero movie, what does it have to say about heroism and what it means to be heroic? Can you talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, a hero's journey is a convention in storytelling that, you know, it's basic beats and characters and a flow rhythm to the story that, you know, has been told over time. And the fact that it takes a simple character, a simple guy, kind of a mess up. I mean, they don't really establish, you know, that he's a mess up, but he's not totally in a good spot at the beginning of the movie. You know, he's starting to kind of lose his relationship with his girlfriend. He's kind of reckless. And you turn him into a hero. I mean, that's going to be a story that's told forever. I mean, and infinitely. You know, we sort of draw it from, you know, we definitely draw it from the meta narrative of scripture. But, you know, it's a story of a hero that saves, that isn't your typical hero, you know, a carpenter, right? Jesus was a carpenter, but he became a savior. You know, that's part of the meta narrative, and it's just part of our inherent being that we're all capable of, you know, overcoming if nothing else. And I think, you know, the Rocketeer is one of those movies that's not afraid to tell a very simple good versus evil story. And I think being heroic is a word that's thrown around a lot in very weird kind of ways now. You have a sports person as a hero, but you can also have a soldier that's a hero. So we have a real interesting cultural definition of what it means to be a hero. And I think a movie like this really just points out the simplicity of you can overcome, you can defeat evil, no matter what background that you have. And I think that that's also part of our meta narrative, is that you're able and you're worthy no matter who you are, no matter where you come from. So, I mean, it's easy to try to get complex with it, but it's really quite simple with this movie. And I think that's what works so well about it.
Yeah, this is a movie that values the underdog. So Cliff Secord, our protagonist, mm-hmm. he's no Bruce Wayne. He's no billionaire that's out doing things by night, right? He's a man of humble means.
Yeah.
Who's got this passion for flying. He's not nearly as perfect or powerful as Superman. And then in the end, it's not Howard Hughes. Right, this rich business tycoon who saves the mm-hmm. day here. So this is really a David and Goliath story. A man against Nazi Germany. And the movie even has an actual Goliath. I mean, it's got Lothar, this huge giant who's hulking around everywhere, breaking people's bones.
Yeah.
And he's taken down in the end by this very small sort of
unremarkable
guy.
Yeah, unremarkable. Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because I did notice that if you combine Cliff, our hero, with Howard Hughes, you basically get Tony Stark.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're talking about influences and what it means to be a hero, I mean, you know, I think Tony Stark is, you know, Howard Stark is Marvel's Howard Hughes, and Tony Stark is his son, and he's still kind of the Howard Hughes-esque personality, but then he kind of, his heroism and his story is when he kind of becomes the Cliff type of guy who wants to be heroic and care about people and, you know, more than himself. So it's really interesting to see those two. I think if you just smash those two together, you get Tony Stark.
Yeah. There's also something that really jumped out at me this time watching it that I don't know that I'd paid close attention to before. The very last line, or at least one of the last lines in the film, Cliff is talking to Howard Hughes.
Mm-hmm.
And Howard's talking to him about what it was like to fly that thing. And he says, quote, "It's the closest I'll get to heaven, Mr. Hughes."
Yeah.
And then he looks over Howard Hughes' shoulder and sees Jennifer Connelly's character. And then he says, "Well, maybe not."
Yeah.
And so it's really easy to kind of look at that and say, "Oh, well, they're just sort of Disneyfying, you know, the end of the movie." And there is a bit of that going on, to be fair. But I think it's also sort of pointing at the idea that relationships, ultimately being in any kind of relationship, not just a romantic relationship, takes you outside of yourself and your own preoccupations, your own concerns. You go from being someone who's centered around your own desires, your own dreams, your mm-hmm. own your own wishes, and you become centered on someone else, which of course is what happens when Christ through His Holy Spirit gives us new affections in the gospel, as our hearts aren't focused on ourselves anymore. We're focused on Christ.
Yeah. Well, and I think we tend to confuse, and this is something I quote often, we tend to confuse the supernatural with the spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
And something that's just, you know, spiritual is something that's supernatural. And I think relationships, you know, are a supernatural thing. I think they have a supernatural power, and that can be a good thing and a bad thing. But, you know, that's something that I think is really interesting about this movie. You know, he doesn't have a superpower. He's just a guy with a rocket, and so there's no super spectacular supernatural in this, but there's something supernatural about, you know, and very spiritual as what we believe, to heroism and to, sacrificing yourself for another and putting your life on the line and caring about somebody enough to do that and be a hero, despite facing, you know, a really big, scary dude.
Yeah. Well, that actually wraps things up for us here on this episode of Real World Rewind. But before we go, Mark, thanks again for coming on. And how can people find your work and find you on social media?
Well, thanks. I really enjoy this. These are a lot shorter than the regular Real World podcast, so it's, you know, kind of in and out.
Yeah,
it's nice.
I could
definitely talk about this for a couple of hours. But you could find me on Twitter. My handle is Mark Wingdinger. It's just a funny version of my name. And then just follow me on Real World. I do a lot of writing for the site, and I do primarily do a lot of TV recaps and reviews and stuff. It's something I enjoy doing. So if you're a TV watcher, come follow what I'm doing. Just wrote up a whole bunch on Stranger Things, which is super popular right now. So you can check out my writing there for sure.
Yeah, be sure to check that out. And thank you, all of our listeners, so much for taking time out of your week to listen. And I really do want to stop and just say that I really do mean that. We are all very busy people, and there are a ton of podcasts and other shows that you could have listened to.
Yeah.
Actually, you probably should have listened to instead of this. So I truly do appreciate your listening. Jeremy, you reached out to us on social media and asked, hey, we're a little late with Rewind this month. Is it still coming? So that really means a lot that someone's listening, that someone's interested in listening.
Yeah, that's great.
Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you, everyone else. Please feel free to continue this discussion in the Real World Theology Facebook group. And until next time, thanks for rewinding with us.
This podcast has been a Real World Theology production. For more information, check out realworldtheology.com. And thanks for listening.
Now this is podcasting. Woo!